Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, today, our jump-off topic is the Los Angeles homeless crisis. And on Blog Talk board, we got Los Angeles Housing Crisis 2022. The newly elected mayor of Los Angeles, California, before she even went to City Hall officially for her first day, she held a press conference stating that her top priority, at least one of them, is to address the, I guess they would call it a state of emergency in Los Angeles, California, dealing with the homeless population. So that's our jump off top for today. We'll be back to start that in about 4 minutes.
Touch.
Okay, I had to boot my phone up real quick. All right, now today's jump-off topic, Los Angeles homeless crisis, 2022, we're going into 2023. As stated before, the newly elected mayor of Los Angeles, California, held a press conference before she even went to her first day officially in the mayor's office in Los Angeles County, declaring a state of emergency for the city of Los Angeles. They have it's in crisis mode, the homeless situation is. And, there's tent cities here and there within the city of Los Angeles. UCLA, University of California of Los Angeles, well-known school, they have even a parking program called Safe Parking. They have a Facebook page for students who attend UCLA, but they can't afford to rent a room, share a house, but they can afford to live in their car, van, or whatever whatever their vehicle is. So they have a safe parking program, and there are other cities around the country that have that. Some places around the country, Walmart's had that for a while. Not all Walmarts, but some Walmarts, you can safe park overnight on their property. I think maybe Country Barrel has that as well, or Country Fair, whatever you call them, but yeah, good food, but I think some of those might have it. I'm sure somebody on the entrepreneurial scene is making money from it. Even myself, right? I rent one of my carports out. So it's not new to Los Angeles because the last mayor, Garcetti, he came up with some, I guess, strategies or solutions or possible solutions, but the problem still exists. So even in New York City, where homelessness has been around forever, almost, their new mayor, a relatively new mayor, he's trying to grapple with it as well. Personally, my take on it, I don't think large municipalities will, I can't see them coming up with any viable solutions within the next 5 years. There's a possibility. Well, here's one strategy. In Mongolia, particularly in their capital city, in Mongolia, historically is a nomad country. About maybe 30-40% of the people that live in Mongolia are nomads. Now, in their capital city, Ulaanbaatar, they do have a section for people. They have yurts. Yurts is, those are Mongolian tents. That's what a yurt is. You can look it up. Y-U-R-T, some people spell it Y-E-R-T, but Y-U-R-T, look up Mongolian yurt. So historically, part of their culture, they live in tents, yurts. They call them yurts, and they're nicely designed and whatnot. and they can stand up to, you know, the Mongolian winters. But in their capital city, they do have a section of the city where, you know, in terms of what we call zoning over here, you know, so, but that's part of their culture. I think that same idea could work here, but it seems like, at least from my point of view, and I don't see the whole picture, that a lot of these larger municipalities, which, you know, developers dictate a lot. If they're bankrolling elections, they can dictate a lot of policy. And the tent committee or the tent community in Los Angeles and any other major American city, they haven't organized as a political unit. Now, if you have these people that are living in tents in Los Angeles, you got also Oakland, California, you also got San Francisco, California, as well as other cities outside of the state of, California. If they ever organize as a political block, which means they would also have to raise some money to bankroll elections, you might be able to get a tent like they do in Mongolia right now. All right. But anyway, so this new mayor of Los Angeles, California has it. So I want to take a look at what are the root causes of homelessness. And, here's some of the things I've come up with. Now, I'm not going to include mental illness because there's a lot of that out there. But not everybody who's homeless is mentally ill. I'm not going to include alcohol and drugs because a lot of people who are homeless don't even indulge with alcohol and drugs. So here's what I've come up with, and I mentioned some of these on here before. Start with this one. Now, you know I'm into statistics. Here's one statistic that I haven't brought up on here before, but this is California specific, this particular statistic. 60% of the landmass in the state of California, which is over half, 60% of the landmass in California is rural. However, 95% of the population of California lives in an urbanized area. So that's why you have a homeless problem, supply and demand. You have a whole bunch of people, once again, 95% of the population of the state of California, live in urbanized areas. Where, and then when you have that many people crammed into small spaces, you know, supply, the price of everything goes up, including housing. Food costs more. Everything costs more when you got that many people crammed into a small amount of space. Yet, the majority of people that are homeless don't even realize that 60% of the landmass in California is, and you know what, that could be a 30-minute drive from L.A., 45-minute drive, to, you know, how far you want to go out. But 60% of the landmass in California, it's urban. Matter of fact, a friend of mine that lives, she lived in the Bay Area for several years. Man was always struggling. She moved like 3 hours away or 4 hours away from the Bay Area in Northern California. And she's on like almost 3 acres of land, grows some of her own food, and that type of thing. So we'll get her on here soon. So common denominator number one is the people that are homeless in Los Angeles, they don't realize, you know what, if they just moved out to Los Angeles, the rural areas of Los Angeles County. Now, there's something going on out there, too, but Los Angeles County does have, you know, they do have a rural area. Walmart, most of the people that you see with those tents in Los Angeles, a good percentage of them bought those tents at Walmart. So we know that the Walmart crowd is there. And you can base a whole community based on that, where you don't even have to have them in tents. You can have them in more, something more substantial. That doesn't cost that much. Another common denominator is these people, they lack carpet. More than likely, they lack the carpentry skills or house building skills, even for a doghouse or a birdhouse. Next, food supply. Most of these people do not know how to grow their own food. And I would say, overall, they're housing illiterate. And then, of course, in California, you're dealing with Los Angeles has a severe housing crisis. Oakland, California has a housing crisis. San Francisco Bay Area has a housing crisis. I imagine so does San Diego, California, and so does San Jose. California has, in the top 10 cities in the United States, and there are only 10 cities out of 19,500 municipal cities that have a population of 1 million or more right now. California has 3. San Jose has a population of 1 million or more people. Los Angeles has 1 million or more people. And let's see, Los Angeles, San Diego. Oh, yeah, San Jose. I named 3. L.A., Los Angeles, San Diego, and San Jose. Both out of the top 10 largest cities in the United States, 3 of them in California. And once again, they're totally ignoring, or they're not aware, or don't have the skill set to even think about driving 30 minutes, 40 minutes, or whatever it might be, where they can go where it's just rural. We're not talking about suburban. We're not talking about the exurbs. We're talking about rural. And in many places, there's nobody living there. But you have to have the skill set, which you can acquire. You can acquire the skill set. I mean, to be honest about it, most of the people that are on Skid Row, well, not Skid Row, but most of the people that might be living in the tents in these particular cities, most of them have a mobile phone. Many of them have a smartphone. And you can basically go to YouTube University and learn a lot. And then you can contact the people who've made those videos. I imagine if somebody... several people, I don't know how many, that on, not Skid Row, but in homeless encampments in Los Angeles and all these other places, that they have Clubhouse. They have access to Facebook. So the people, they have the tools. It's just, I guess they have to change their frequency. But in any event, I think there's an e-commerce solution to it. Because of Jeff Bezos, and you got to do some collaborations. Jeff Bezos started, Amazon, I think, in 1994 out of his garage. He was selling books originally. And really, Jeff Bezos really is in collaboration with maybe 6 million people he might not, he doesn't know hardly any of these people, but the way his platform is set up, it's a collaboration. So the same thing can be done, in my opinion, with this homeless situation. If you form some collaborations with certain strategic people, you can get yourself out of homelessness. And you can go as far as you want to. So, but I believe e-commerce is just, and you can use e-commerce multiple ways to do that. So anyway, that's my rant to start the day. Area code 309, your microphone is open.
Good morning. Yeah, I like
good morning.
I like seeing the state of emergency for the homeless, you know, in L.A. The thing is the city of Los Angeles got a court order, a judgment put against them over a year ago, and they had 1 year or 6 months to get the homeless off the street, off the skid row. And, of course, that city did not do that. I don't necessarily know what kind of city ordinance they broke or what kind of fines they should have had to pay, but I was thinking about that because I see what my city made me pay for helping the homeless, and it's certainly them helping the homeless. They're getting the furthest thing from it. But, you know, that thought came across my mind. So that judgment in L.A. on the city of L.A., how much money did they have to pay? And who did they pay it to? And what is the money being used for not meeting that need that was put on them to do? Because that was over a year ago, and it hasn't happened. Now, yesterday, I was speaking with Cornell Ward. He is the, let's see, public outreach program director for the mayor's office in L.A.
Yeah.
And he's setting up a meeting immediately with them for us to implement this solution to their problem. So we want to answer the state of emergency with a stat house superior to a tent. And then we're going to go to Superior to a trailer, so that way they'll have a transition out of that house without a kitchen into something that they can cook and fend for themselves. I do have a few organizations in L.A. One of them is called Tiny Town, and they've got, I'm wanting to say, 19 acres out on the edge of L.A., and that's what we need to be looking at is the empty parking lots, the blighted land, and any property that's outside the city so that we can actually do something positive, change people's lives, and not try to put them in the middle of the problems that they're going through. You know, these people are trying to escape from reality on drugs, because their reality isn't good. Their reality isn't good because we're not all claiming make people go through problems alone. And it doesn't say anywhere that it's written that we're supposed to go through this alone. And the thing is everything that's written was done by man or mankind, I'll put it that way, because women write a lot. And they're wonderful, so smart, brilliant. And what's so nice is we have a woman, Karen Bass, that has stepped up and done something that a man wouldn't do. She claimed something before she did anything else. So now we not only want to help her claim that, we want her to redeem it. Because this has been needing to be claimed for a while. And I'm very proud to see her step up and do it. But the other part that made me more excited was I made a text message straight into the mayor's office and got a response. So they are serious, and I think this was an amazing first step for LA. in embracing what she's going to do for the city, because it's about to bring things that's never been before, and that's an opportunity. So, yeah, I hand it back to you, brother.
Well, now, Garcetti, the former mayor, I guess he attempted to do something, but it didn't turn out the way he expected it to turn out. And then the mayor of New York City has addressed this issue one, two, or three times already since he's been in. What do you think some of the roadblocks that they had to get through?
Well, the one thing is you got to have an open mind and you got to rewrite what you wrote, because it's just like these city ordinances that are in my city. I can't help people with their ordinances. Now, who wrote that ordinance and why did it have to stop me from helping somebody? You know, everybody wants to be in control. And what that mayor needs to do is step back and relinquish control to the people in the community. You know, we don't need to bring people from across the country to go to New York to deal with that problem. We got millions of people there. We don't need to bring anybody to California. We need to bring them the material they need and the ability they have to do this. People, here's the obstacle. What are you doing about it? You want to know what the obstacle is? You're doing nothing. I'm going to tell you. I'll be as point blank as I can possibly be about it. I know what I've seen. I've been doing this for 20 or 17 years, and I know what I see. I hear people say what they would like to do, to like to do something and doing it is two different things. But if you say things and they're just empty words to maybe get some press, like you said, the mayor went at it three or four times. I've sent the mayor's office in New York 10 times a solution, and they ain't responded. So I'm going to look at them as being the problem. So, you know, what are the obstacles? It's people is the obstacles. The human race is the obstacles. Open-mindedness is the obstacles. Closed-mindedness is the obstacles. You know, you guys are all creators every second of the day. What are you creating? What are you doing? What is it? Is it just about you and your family and what you're going to get out of it? If so, cool. I'm going to see it, I'm going to know it, and everyone else is too. But it ain't going to change what's going on around you. You have to be the change you want to see.
I agree. I think one of the problems is within city government. For example, like in your case up in Illinois, you had private land, and you offered it to people on your private land, you know, a way where they can, you know, get off the street. And then I imagine, was it zoning that came in with that, or, you know, with the porta potty thing? You know.
Yeah, it was zoning.
I thought that was a sensible solution. So government says one thing, but then another part of government within the same government, you know, they sent out the code enforcement, and code enforcement, I mean, there's a reason theoretically why it exists, but a lot of times code enforcement is just looking for ways to collect revenue. That's just my opinion. Because they fined you how much?
$7,360.
Yeah, see, you know, elderly women. And you were solving the problem that the city didn't solve. And so I think a lot of these large municipalities, not the small ones, but a lot of these municipalities They don't have the imagination. And then they penalize people because you had a, like I said, you had private land. You put the porta potty there. And you took, you know, what, 5, 6, 7 people off the street. Yet you get penalized for doing that. So that happens in a lot of these larger municipalities. And like you said, they need to rewrite what they already wrote. So good luck to the mayor of Los Angeles, because you got these some of these agencies that you know, and I imagine some of these agencies might get funded from the fines that they assess people. You know, I had to do some research on that, but I'm just thinking. Because, like, the DEA, basically, long story short, they rob drug dealers. They confiscate all their bank accounts, the cash from that, the assets, you know, card houses, boats and all that. And then that gets absorbed into their budget. So, because they have auctions. So, and then L.A., a city of that size where you got infrastructure, you got a huge pension funds that you have to pay out monthly, you have huge payrolls, and then repairing the infrastructure is like a never-ending process, and it's expensive. So, but let's see what she comes up with. She's in there, brand spanking new. Let's see what the mayor of New York, because once again, part of the solution, and just in my opinion, you got too many people in a crowded space. California, once again, 60% of the land mass is rural. And I believe the solution will come from, as it does in most cases, private individuals, such as yourself. So, and Carlos, let me bring Carlos up here. Let me get back to my studio real quick. Okay, wait a minute here. I like the safe parking idea that UCLA has. And maybe the city of Los Angeles, they might adopt. Because I've noticed that's what government does a lot. They'll see what's working on the private side of things. And then they'll adopt it as a revenue generator for the city, for the municipality. So maybe LA will dedicate some parking areas for the homes.
We've located okay, 5 of them.
5 of them, okay.
Yeah, 5 empty parking lots that are in downtown. They're within a quarter mile or a half mile of Skid Row. We've also I believe it's 100,000 square foot building that's right across the street from City Hall. And we've got all that in a package to build 2,500 stat houses on those 5 parking lots. So that
now let me ask you this. Who's on the front?
Go ahead, what?
How is that going to be funded? I mean, funded through the city?
Well, there's, I got legislation passed through California to build 42,000 steel frame temporary homes for the homeless with a $5.8 billion budget. That is not including any of the budgets for any of the cities. And every major city in California has billions of dollars to do this.
Okay. right.
And I know.
Carlos, what do you million. Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris. I'm listening. Finish that start.
Yeah, I was going to say $500 million. We put a proposal together for the Ukrainian refugees, and there was 10 million of them. But for $500 million, they all could have had a home, a purpose, and something positive in their life. And the thing about the way Poland Congress thought about that was, why does it cost $500 million? I said, why did we just give you $20 billion? I said, if we just gave you $20 billion and you could use $500 million and house all men, why are you going to buy bombs? Why are you going to buy weapons of mass destruction? This is a weapon of reconstruction. But you need to reconstruct these people's lives. And so, you know, the thing is there's 5.8 billion. If there was 500 million that came toward this project, it would residually start to pay for itself, because in the city of Los Angeles, they're paying unbelievable. Okay, it's unbelievable. But I want you to know that they're paying up to, I think it's, I'm wanting to say it's $200,000 to house one person for a year.
That's crazy.
That's it. One person. And they're, and the thing is they're doing wrong with the money. They need to do right with it. And they have the ability, they have all the ability. You have all the people. Every one of those people that's pushing a cart, put a screw gun in their hand instead of the cart. Show them what they can do with that screw gun in an hour. And they don't have to push the cart anymore because all their stuff can be inside that room.
I agree with you 100%. I think education, just exactly what you just said, I think education and providing them with a, teaching them a skill set, that's the ultimate solution. However, I haven't heard any talk out of the mayors of L.A., past, present, New York City. None of them have talked about that solution. But that is a solution.
That's right. Yeah. Now, I gave them a solution. How come they ain't talking about it? Because it's the same thing that happened when I built the greenest built home in America in 2011. You know, Congressman Timothy Johnson, God rest his soul, okay, that man quit being a congressman because this was ignored. How long are you going to ignore it? Okay, 2011, President Obama got a letter in his hand that told him there was a solution to give the homeless homes and the jobless jobs. How many freaking people have been unemployed since 2011? This is the problem, okay? We have to act. You have to have action, okay? Act turns to action. Action has a reaction. So you can keep adding to it. What are you doing? Something. So if you start out with an act, there'll be an action. If you do an action, there'll be a reaction. But the difference is whether they react. What is your reaction? Is it negative? Is it positive? It's up to you. No one can make your mind up for you but you. You know, I had a very hard lesson in that yesterday. I'm dealing with it every day. And people need to realize that because of things that happen, should drive you harder to get this right and do it now. If you don't order a package or start talking to people about ordering a package, if you don't get a hold of a church in your community and ask them, and 10 of them, and ask them, guess what? You're not doing your part. I'm going to call you out, straight out. If you're not doing, you are part of the problem. And I want you to be part of the solution. I need everyone to realize you are amazing. But you have the ability to do it. No one else does. I can't change your mind. I can't make your mind up for you. I cannot even make the next thought come in your mind. It's you. So I can share all day. I've done it. But also, they went and took credit. I don't want credit. I want the credit to come to you for stepping up and being true. You know, I'm speaking to everybody on this thing listening. If you're listening, hear me. I'm talking to you. I know who I am. I know what I do. I know what I've done. But you don't. You need to find out. I'll share it with you because it belongs to you. You have the same ability. You have more. Don't ignore what you're hearing. I got 2 feet of material coming out of a machine per second. Anybody else got that? Call me on the phone. Tell me about it. If you do, I want to utilize it because it's time to change what's going on. And the only way we do that is step up and do it. Don't be scared. I teach children how to do it. You're an adult and you're scared? Come on, I'll show you. You don't need to be scared. It ain't nothing to scare you. If anything, it'll excite you. But there is a problem. There is a discord. And it's between the people and the politicians and the city governments that have set up things to hold you where you are. We, the people, need to be the change we want to see. And I'm not trying to be hostile. I'm trying to be real. You want to have a real conversation with me, call me on the phone. My phone number is 309-542-6319. If you don't call, don't be scared. Text me. We'll text back and forth. I won't say anything mean to you. I will educate you on what you don't know and what you might be able to start changing what's around you by you having some information that you don't know. And I'm glad you had this topic today because it needs to be known. There is billions and billions of dollars sitting in California to fix this problem. The problem is people are putting it in their pocket and not fixing the problem. Guess what? They are the problem. I'm going to say it as straight as I can. There is a problem, but it's us. And we have to be the solution because we are. Our children are the solution to every adult's problem, and I'm an adult. So, go ahead.
And we're going to bring in Carlos, right? Carlos, your mic is open. Let me put this question out to Carlos or either one of you. A few years ago, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there was a guy, he's got a YouTube video on YouTube where he built, you know, he built tiny houses out of, you know, stuff that people left behind and was built them for the homeless and whatnot. Long story short, code enforcement came along and confiscated those tiny houses. They were on wheels, casters, most of them. So he brought about a viable solution, but another city agency came along and sent that idea to hell. So, Carlos, what are your thoughts on, you know, conflicting government agencies? One government says we want to do this. Another government agency in the same city, they're the polar opposite of it, and they undo. What, you know, what are your thoughts on that in the current housing crisis, not only in L.A., but anywhere in the United States?
You know, I think the problem Brother Chris is also hitting on, you know, right now our country is basically ruled by insatiable greed coupled with infinite stupidity. We value money that more than we value people. As Chris has noted, there's funds available, you know, to solve this problem. But I believe the powers that be really don't want to solve it because they're profiting from it. As we recently learned, some of the cities are addressing the problem by jailing the homeless. And of course, this supports the you know, big everything, right? Big prison, big pharma, big drugs, big alcohol. You know, why is there a liquor store on every corner in the cities that need help? Why is drug abuse rampant in the cities that need help? It's because people have no hope. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but the only way to really get anything done, it seems, just from my short time working with Chris, trying to look at this problem and address it, is that the people that have the money are not interested in helping the homeless. They're only interested in making more money. And that's the only way you can, you know, I'm not saying all of them, but, you know, I guess there's some angels out there somewhere, you know. I've run into a lot of devils, but not so many angels. You know, I've been told in rooms not to mention anything about the true mission of helping, because the people that have the funds don't want to hear that. They want to hear how they can get 10x within a year. I was in the COP 26 clubhouse rooms, and I stopped. I didn't attend COP 27 because it's just the same bullshit. Talk, 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 talk. You know, you've got the people that have extracted all the wealth from Earth asking, what is the return on investment on fixing the problems that they created? So, you know, this is a really difficult solution, you know, and I'm afraid what I'm learning and what I've learned from, you know, being with Brother Chris for a little while is that it's going to be up to the little people to solve all of our problems. I believe government is not going to help. I believe big business is not going to help. I think it's going to be up to us, you know. And you know,
I agree 100%.
It's a very, very difficult problem.
I agree 100%. We're going to have to solve our own problem, not government.
But back to you, you know, the you know, yes, there's money being made. You know, why did Chris get fined? Because that's $7,600 in revenue for the city. I parked one time my car in Georgetown. The sidewalk is literally 2 inches high. It's an old cobblestone area. My back wheel was literally 1 inch over this 2-inch curb, and I got a $50 ticket for parking on the sidewalk. And the thing about it is, to appeal the ticket, you have to pay it first, and then you have to go out of your day to go into court and to argue over some stupid infraction like that that literally makes no sense. Why? Because they need to raise money for the city. The sad thing about this is,
right,
Chris and I have a way to raise money. You know, if we actually took some land, you know, there's tons of land now that's available because of COVID. You know, if we took that land and actually housed humans on it and gave them a purpose through gardening and being able to grow their own food, so at least they could, you know, sustain themselves, and then took, you know, the profit from that, and you know, these little villages could actually generate more electricity than they use. So now you have a way of making money for the city. And with that money, you could also cover what's also needed with his services. You know, many of these people require health services, like mental health services, you know, PTSD services, you know, job finding services, all that stuff. And that's the only way I could ever see it possibly working, is by showing them how they're going to make money out of it. And that's all I have to say on that.
Well, I agree with you. I don't the mayor of the mayor of New York and Los Angeles. The politics involved, because listen, the people that are, you know, you have a number of shelters, like, for instance, in my opinion, the homeless problem maybe not all of it 100%, but I believe over 50, maybe even up to 80% of it could be eliminated within a 30-day period of time by people just using, like, churches through our parking lots. Make that available. Churches that have enough indoor space where people can sleep at night, that can be a part of it. People that have private land like Chris, that can be a part of it. Private individuals, if we're allowed to do what we want to do within reason, okay, we can put the social services office out of business within 30 days worth of time. Well, at least, let's say, well, let's stretch it out to 6 months. However, we're looking at the politics of it. There are people that, you know, that'll eliminate their revenue. Even the Salvation Army, which is a church, they have a number of locations that have shelters, you know, dormitories for men, dormitories for women. I don't know if they have anything for children. They probably do. But a lot of what I call poverty pimps, their revenue, they would have to find a new source of revenue. So I agree with you. It's going to have to be solved on an individual basis. And I haven't heard the educational component on like teaching somebody how to grow their own tomatoes. I mean, how to grow a tomato plant. You know, that's a start to start learning how to feed yourself. So water. You know, a lot of those people are buying bottled water or they're getting municipal water some kind of way. So the city makes, and basically the municipal water system is a monopolized system in a lot of your large cities. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what just happens with this mayor.
You know, the greenhouses that we have will generate drinking water from salt water. I'm trying to get a meeting with the mayor, Barocco of Newark, New Jersey. There's a gentleman named Hakeem Green. He's a famous rapper that has connections to the mayor over there, and he's actually on a lot of nonprofits for helping, and he has talked about introducing us to the mayor to do some sort of proposal. You know, I mean, Jersey's by the water, right? These greenhouses will evaporate salt water and generate drinking water. But, you know, this is the problem, you know, is that there are monopolies. You know, there's interests, money interests that do not want solutions like this because then they lose money. And it really is sort of like a tangled web. I mean, I just picture when I look at the United States, I just see this octopus with tentacles over everything that keeps you from really doing any good unless you become part of that system. Why do we still have brothers in jail for marijuana when rich people are selling, you know, making billions of dollars on selling marijuana now? You know, it's all intertwined, and I don't know how to fix it. You know, I don't know what will fix it. But I think it's going to take, you know, community action. Churches, I think, are a good place since they have the community to take a challenge from Chris. Like, you know, you're a church, you really want to help your people. You know, handing stuff out doesn't help, okay? Handing it out doesn't help. It just keeps enabling the problem. You need to give people a purpose. You need to get them involved in doing something. And growing food is one of the most spiritual and beneficial things I've ever done in my life, okay? And the systems that I've designed are pretty much idiot-proof. I mean, I throw a seed in there, and it grows because it's self-watering. You know, you can feed the fish from food scraps. You know, all the food that we waste, you know, by the way, this is another huge area that could raise billions of dollars. All food waste could be fermented, mixed with charcoal, with a biochar, and turned into super high quality animal feed. My understanding is food waste is one of the biggest wastes of revenue that we have as a human species. So, you know, with these greenhouses, you could take food waste, ferment it, add biochar, which is really easy to make. You know, there's these simple devices that not only generate cooking gas, it's called syngas, but they can run off of wood pellets or sticks, you know, just tiny little bits of biomass, and they convert that biomass into biochar. And then biochar can be mixed with waste food, fermented, and generate super high-quality animal feed, which could feed, you know, the fish. Because, you know, there's inputs required in an aquaponic system. You have to feed the fish. That's the input. You know, the fish have to eat. The fish generate, you know, they poop. They generate nitrates. That is the food for the plants. And then the plants clean the water, and the clean water goes back into the pond. But you need to feed the fish. But the interesting thing is they can live off of all the food that we're wasting. You know, and we waste tons and tons and tons of food every single day. And then we don't allow people to eat it. You know, I've heard stories of people trying to give away food that's like, you know, past the due date. And you know, there's regulations that you know, you can't do that. I've heard stories here in Washington, D.C. where people were trying to feed the homeless and they got fined for not having a permit to feed people. You know, they would rather let people die in the middle of the night and freeze to death than to get a free meal. So, I'm this whole process, you know, working with Brother Chris has been super enlightening and super depressing, you know, because just understanding the problem and realizing that, you know, there's money out there, but you have to know how to get it. You have to know the right people, and you have to make money for the right people, or else it just doesn't happen.
Right.
But, you know,
that's why my strategy, I call it the Walmart strategy. Walmart started in Bentonville, Iowa, not Iowa, Arkansas. Let me see what the current population of, Bentonville. Bentonville, Arkansas, the population is 56,734 people. Zanesville, Ohio, they have a population of 24,721. Let's go back to the Walmart thing. I would, now this is just me personally, because I haven't been to Bentonville, but I have been to Zanesville. And when I stepped off the bus in Zanesville, because I was going to an Earthship retreat where we, you know, we were building Earthships, all buildings using Earthship methodology. I got off the bus and said, this is the real United States of America. And then which they have less than 25,000 people. So now, I would say, let's just use Walmart because they're the big people around the block. I would say use as a ground zero. Find a town that's got no more than, let's say, 57,000 people, and then go 10 to 15 minutes outside of the city limits, and then you'll see the real United States of America. And then in those towns, because the towns that I've had luck in is, you know, 350 people or less, 100 people or less. One particular town that I go to, I'm not going to mention on this show no more, but I've had the mail on here about five, six times. You know, they pick me up at the airport. So I say you get, and what Walmart did, matter of fact, not only Walmart, you know, with the late Sam Walton, but Ted Turner did it too. I'll illustrate it this way. When I went to college, 1976, freshman year, and now I grew up predominantly in Washington, D.C., not all the time because I went to boarding school in South Florida for 3 years and then lived with my grandparents in New Orleans for another year. But the D.C. metro, which is now called DMV. So in 1976, September 19th or August 6th, 1976, there was no such thing as cable television in Washington, D.C. And I don't think they had it in Baltimore, Maryland at the time either. But let's just talk about D.C. So now, however, when I went to, because my school, West Texas, when I went there, it was West Texas State University. Now it's West Texas A&M University. When I attended that and went there in August 76, there was cable television. There was a superstation. Ted Turner, out of Atlanta was a superstation. So they had cable television. And Canyon, even today, I don't even think Canyon, Texas has a population of 15,000 people today. All right. So, and I went through a culture shock because that part of Texas in the Panhandle, that's in the real part of the United States where if you have an idea, you can get it off the ground. You can get it off the ground with very little or almost no politics involved. I remember we did a class field trip and we went to Mesa Petroleum owned by T. Boone Pickens. He was right in the next room. He couldn't come out to talk to us, but his assistant, he talked to us for a while. But, looking back on it, I didn't even know that he was a billionaire back then. But the thing is, the innovation, the people, the politicians, in my opinion, that are accepting of innovation or a new idea, you're going to find these people in these little small towns, not only in the United States, but across the globe. So with Sam Walton, because I know there's a Walmart in Washington, D.C. right now. But it wasn't easy getting them in there. People resist. I know we don't want this in our neighborhood. This is Washington, D.C., and this is less than 10 years ago that you have neighbors in Washington, D.C. You had some people that didn't want a Walmart in their subdivision of neighborhood. That's the kind of place D.C. is. So I've noticed that a lot of these bigger companies got a toehold is it's like baseball. They hit a lot of singles with the small towns. Small towns, population 200. Small town, population 100. Small town, put it this way, 2,500 people or less. So with what I do, okay, because I tried to get something off the ground with landlords in D.C. when I went through that squatter thing, and I didn't get no help, no cooperation. But then when I went rural, then I started to get some traction, like really fast. So like on here, I've had about three mayors on this podcast. I've met two of them in person and one multiple times in person. So, and was able to generate some business. So, that's my take on it. These large cities, and that's why like a month ago, as of this Thursday, we had three people on from the Freedom Georgia Initiative. I was thinking your largest cities, the New Yorks, the LAs, the Chicagos, the Miamis, the Seattles, It's going to be if you could fix a problem. Now, because people do have a solution. But in order to fix the problem, it's going to be very political and very expensive. It's dramatically less expensive to go out here and buy a bunch of acres of your own, 40 acres, 50, let's say 100 acres or more, 1,000 acres. It's easier to start your own town. That's just my take on it. There's no one particularly cookie-cutter thing, but I like the Sam Walton example because Sam Walton, look, most people that shop at Walmart today, if you would ask them, have you ever heard of Bentonville, Arkansas, I would probably say at least 50% of them have never even heard of the place. Okay, much less been there. So I would say I don't know what the population of Bentonville, Arkansas was when Walton started that because his first venture into that was, he was doing five and dime stores, which I don't think, if there might be one or two of those left, I guess. But I would say, and that's the beauty of cyberspace. In e-commerce, cyberspace, and because if we take a look at Jeff Bezos, okay, cyberspace, there really is no politics. I mean, he didn't have to worry about population. He didn't have to worry about the politics. In cyberspace, there is no zoning. So the things that Jeff Bezos was able to do, he was able to, at warp speed, surpass. Now, here's a guy. How does a guy out of his garage supersede Sears? Kmart's out of business. Sears is on life support. Well, in cyberspace, with Amazon, he doesn't have to worry about property taxes. He doesn't have to worry about zoning. And he's got over 6 million partners, and that can be, there's people like you and me that, like I said, this guy started off selling books online. So Mark Zuckerberg, if you look at a lot of these new billionaires, they're pioneers, but they're into things that have little or no government regulation. Small towns or tiny towns there is some government. There are some rules and regulations, but it's like to the minimum. So there are things that you can do in Podunk, Iowa that you can't do in Seattle, Washington. That's just the nature of the beast. So I agree with you, Chris.
L.A., that's a wonderful point. When we were driving down to Art Basel, we drove all the way from Virginia down to Florida. We passed some of the smaller towns. And the beauty of the smaller towns, like you said, the politics are contained, right? In other words, it's not like a multi typically they're fairly homogenous. And the interesting thing is because they have such a tight-knit community, everybody knows everybody.
Right.
I think you're onto something, and the approach that we should really take is forget about the cities right now because the politics, like you said, are just too entrenched, too difficult to steer around. But if we made a targeted campaign to all the small towns, because, everybody's been suffering from COVID. Everybody's going to, especially the small towns and, they understand the food problem, the food shortage problem, and you can imagine shipping costs to send food to all these little tiny towns, right? It's to me like they would be the most interested in having local solutions, local food production, and even the ability to make money from solar and wind energy. I think that's really, that's the conclusion I came to when I was driving down
to Florida.
Yeah, and you know, see, the Amish and Mennonite communities in the United States, there's a number of them. They're in these rural areas, and then, like, you passed through South North Carolina. North Carolina, statewide, they've got a lot of mobile home communities. Now, you take Washington, D.C., where I'm originally from. Well, D.C.'s not that big anyway, geographically. But you're not going to find any mobile home parks in Washington, D.C. It's not you won't find that in D.C. You can't heat your home or cook within your house using propane. But if you go outside the borders of D.C., I know with, like, in PG County and Montgomery County, suburban propane at my house in D.C., it's a five-minute walk to the lot. But now I can use it outside on a grill, but I can't use it on the inside to cook or heat the house. So like New York City, you know, which is a huge city, there's a lot of things you can't do in New York City, but if you drive an hour outside, an hour, 90 minutes outside and get into New York State, it's a completely different, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. It hit a bunch of singles. That's what Walmart did. Walmart, once again, there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. There's probably double or triple or quadruple that as far as communities that are unincorporated in the United States. And I would say target those cities first.
You know, on the cooking thing, if there's these things called gasifiers. They basically take wood pellets and convert it into syngas, which can be used for cooking or heating, and it's super, super clean, and you don't have to purchase propane or anything. I wonder if that would sort of, in a sneaky way, get around the regulation. I wonder if it's related to buying propane. It's probably more related to them wanting you to be hooked up to the local grid for gas or whatever.
Washington, D.C. now, in Washington, D.C., I'm not talking about the metro, but the city proper, D.C., the monopoly there on natural gas, which heats your home in D.C., unless you got all electric house, and cooks your food within the house in D.C., is Washington Gas. It's a monopoly. So that monopoly basically bankrolls everybody around that table, the city council and the mayor's office, thus the legislation. The other monopoly in D.C. is three: Washington Gas, Pepco, and then the city controlled with municipal water. Those are three monopolies in Washington, D.C. That's why I'm in Florida, not in Washington, D.C. Because I can do more here than I can do there.
Well, you know, you've identified an underlying problem with our government right now, and specifically the politics of the United States. You know, right now we have, a divided country. And the issue that you hit upon, 90% of Americans agree on fixing, i.e. getting big money corruption out of our government. However, whether you're on the left or the right or wherever, as soon as, you know, these public servants come up and you talk about term limits, getting big money lobbying out of the government, you hear crickets from both sides. That issue right there is the underlying issue. Until we get public servants that actually serve the public instead of big money interest, these problems will never be solved, because they have the money and they bought the politicians. So they're, you know, it's an insolvable problem until that's fixed. Until we fix that, that will never be solved. That's the conclusion I've come to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, another example is Airbnb. If you read, and there are a bunch of videos on YouTube where you find the founders tell their story. I mean, here were two guys actually. I mean, they credited with three founders, but it started off with two people. They were behind on their rent in San Francisco. Now, San Francisco, California is a very regulated city when it comes to rental housing and that type thing. So, you know, they started their company, and then it eventually, I mean, they weren't trying to start a business. They were just trying to make up back rent. So they rented out their three bedrooms in the apartment that they had. And then somebody had to tell them, why don't you do this in other places? And then after that, somebody had to tell them, why don't you start a meetup group? And then after that, somebody had to tell them, when they had no money, well, why don't you make a trip out to New York and then, you know, stage the places so people can start, you know, renting these places out. They had to be spoon-fed that. I mean, they're billionaires now. They're not even 40. But the thing is now Airbnb is an app. Politicians, government has not figured out how to regulate apps yet. All right. Or the Internet. Because Obama got in my theory. Obama got elected the first time, which is the most important one, social media. And the old guard of politics, they're not social media savvy. Donald Trump got elected, in my opinion, because he was more media savvy and more social media savvy than the you know, the powers that be at the, you know, Tommy George, not that it was Bush, one of the Bush brothers, Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush, he stopped running for president, and he had spent $100 million on media, but he didn't know nothing about social media. So getting back to Airbnb, now they're in 65,000 cities around the globe because Airbnb is essentially an app. Uber is an app. Lyft is an app. But two of the cities that have been tough on Airbnb is not only New York City, which is highly regulated on a local government level, but the city that gave birth to Airbnb, San Francisco, has probably fought them the most. But you know what? So what, San Francisco's not on board all the way? They've got 65,000 other places, or 64,499 other places that, so what? They don't need San Francisco to New York, L.A., and all those, you know, the bigger Uber cities in Western countries. So it's you know, somebody, there's a whole lot of Nome, Alaskas out there. There's a whole lot of Bangor, Maines out there. You know, there's a whole lot of Frostburg Falls, Minnesota's out there. And that's, in my opinion, it's easier to pick up traction in those cities. Because one of the things that a big city politician is going to ask you is, where have you done this? They're going to ask that. So if you've got 50 cities here or 100 cities here or whatever, and we're talking about little towns. Now, some of you might use Bentonville, Arkansas as your ground zero. I used to use Zanesville, Ohio, because Zanesville, Ohio, with about a population of about 25,000 people. When I went to my Earthship building retreat, the town that I went to has a population of under 1,000 people. All right. You're not going to build an Earthship, and this is in Ohio. Okay, follow Ohio. You're not going to build an Earthship, and it was on somebody's, I think they had 39 or 40 acres. You're not going to build an Earthship in Cleveland, Ohio, or Cincinnati, Ohio, or Toledo, Ohio, or Columbus, Ohio. All those cities have a market of people that could benefit from that. And with an Earthship, well, you know, you build it, there is no mortgage. You get no electric bill. You're not going to get a light bill, and you're not going to get a water bill. So the city's not getting any payoff from that other than maybe property taxes. But go ahead, Chris. I mean, Carlos.
No, I was going to say, Earthships, you know, we design Earthships that also grow food. So that's another interest that's going to be very interested in not having these spread.
Right. So there is no need to go to Whole Foods. So it's but it, like I say, now, like I said, 10 to 15 minutes outside of using Zanesville, Ohio, population, let's put it at 25,000. That's when, and I call Zanesville the real United States of America, but 10 to 15 minute drive outside of that, it gets a whole lot better. So it's like, that's why I say it's the real United States of America. Because where we went to, it was, you know, that's where it was. We got another caller here, 309-580. Your mic is open. Real 9580, mic open. Okay, they might have stepped away. Okay. Hold on a minute. 309-580, your mic is open. Okay, well, they might have stepped away, or if you're on mute, you can take yourself off of mute. I know I bought some land. I don't even know what the population is. So I figured it might be, I don't know. It might be under 100 people. Tomorrow what I want to do is essentially map out a e-commerce marketing strategy where, you know, it'll be easier, in my opinion, to get started. You know, I'm not saying it's not a silver bullet, but I'm just saying based on my experiences and then observations of others. Go for the cities that where the population is like low, and then you can really stretch up. Area code 323, your mic is open.
Yeah, that's pretty good, Ellie. How are you doing?
Fine. Good to hear your voice. I haven't heard you in a while.
Yeah, this is Joe. And you had a show on the other day about tiny houses, and I came in too late to actually call in. So, since you've only got a few minutes left, do you know, because I'd like to buy a tiny house, that would be perfect for me. Someplace out in the country around trees, build a little old cesspool or something. Hopefully it's near a cesspool, or get a tractor, a trailer, something like that. So what do you recommend
Chris, you on the line?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. Well, Joe, here's Chris. Joe's a long time listener to the show, Chris. Chris builds tiny houses.
All right.
Or the parts to him.
Okay, Chris. So there you go.
Well, my question to you is, how much room do you actually need? And that will
how
come
much
down
room?
To what needs to be
not
left.
Much.
Yeah, how much?
I would say less than 200 square feet.
Okay, I've got several designs that are under 200 square feet, and I've got some that's on like 120 square foot footprint. But it has a loft mm-hmm. in the upstairs of it, so it gives you more square footage. So if you're looking at a 200-square-foot deal, if you wanted a loft, that would probably make it more to 300 square feet of living space. So you have those options. So anything you want, you can have. We like to be able to, you know, give you everything you need. We do it, you know, there's an 8-foot by 20-foot It has a loft in it, has a full bathroom, solar, and, you know, we can, that it can be on a trailer, it can be on the ground, you know, put it on a slab, or foundation, put it on, you know, anything you want to do. You can be off-grid, on-grid, any way you want
to
go.
Well, I'd like to have it off-grid, and I've been thinking about it not even that seriously until just now, because I saw L.A. show. I'd like to have something I can travel around with me, pull it, you know, without too much trouble. You said solar. Solar,
yep.
Generator would be fine. Upstairs would be okay, but that's not necessary. I just want to have something which would be transportable without too much trouble. Now, from what,
yep,
I've described, I don't know if that's good enough for you to make an assessment of what kind of prices that you have to meet those kind of requirements. But, you know, what have you got?
No problem. We can design anything you want. So it comes down to what your needs are, what you need to be met. If you don't want to have the upstairs, then I suggest going a little longer than a 20-footer. And put the bedroom in on the main floor. But if you want to call me, my phone number is 309-542-6319, and we can definitely dive in. I can show you different blueprints and stuff of layouts and see if any of them, you know, tickle your fancy or if we need to create something.
Well, I'm sure you have a website.
Hey, Chris.
We do have dreamhabitat.eco that shows a model of a greenhouse that could be, that we're going to be using Chris's construction technology to build, and that would give you an idea of roughly, well, at least the greenhouse design, but I'm sure, Chris, we can get some models up there of the tiny houses. But Chris probably already has that.
All right, so you're saying it's greenhouse.co?
It's Dream Habitat, dreamhabitat.eco for eco.
Okay, and, eco,
and,
okay.
We're partnered, you know, before I met Chris, it was called the Dream Habitat Project, but now it's the Hope for Dream Habitat Project. Because Chris has the manufacturing technology to build the steel frames that we would need for the greenhouses. And you know, those are passive solar designs, so they don't require a lot of heating and cooling energy, to keep warm.
Okay. I'm going to go there now, greenhabitat.eco, okay.
And that'll just give you an idea of at least one version that Chris is, you know, that we've partnered with Chris to build as a greenhouse. But that same thing could be converted into a tiny home about putting it on wheels. I guess Chris would know more about how to do that part of it. But basically, it's a fully insulated structure. And inside of the structure, there's a wall that gets filled with water. And that acts as a thermal battery that keeps the house warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And that's why we've teamed up with Hope for Dream Habitat, that's why the project is now called Hope for Dream Habitat, because Chris Collins brings the technology that enables us to build these from all steel frames so they can be sort of produced very cost effectively and built very cost effectively. And if Chris, you know, I'll get some information from Chris and I'll update the website with any links that Chris has for any, you know, for the models that he's talking about. But that'll give you an idea of roughly what a passive solar design would look like.
Okay. And that's G-R-E-A-N instead of G-R-E-E-N.
Carlos,
how do you spell green again?
I'm sorry. G D-R-E-A-M, Dream.
Oh, Dream Habitat. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Like having a dream.
Right.
Like it's a dream.
Yeah.
And it's dreamhabitat.eco. And again, you know, I was an inventor. I was a homeless veteran for a while. And I'm on a mission to build.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Homes. Well, you know, I was in the special operations. I washed out of special forces scuba school in Key West, Florida, and that kind of ended my special operations career. I didn't even make it to be an operator. So, you know, it wasn't, I know how to survive, if you know what I mean. So it wasn't, it wasn't that horrible for me. It was more embarrassing than anything, you know, having to sleep in my car and, you know,
sleep.
I used to go to the park and sleep in this jungle gym, you know, until I would get kicked out by the park police. Luckily, I had friends that would let me sleep in their garage and bring me food. So the problem is very near and dear to my heart. And Brother Chris is working with veterans and, you know, they're taking their lives 22 a day. Not to mention we've got homeless veterans sleeping in the nation's capital, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, this is my actual mission with Chris, but of course we have the commercial end of it, which is going to drive the nonprofit, you know, because you have to have a commercial aspect in order to drive the nonprofit. And, you know, for people that do partner with us to build, like, you know, Chris has already some pre-made models for tiny homes, but if somebody partnered with us to build, say, a passive solar greenhouse to grow fish plants and mushrooms next to their tiny home, we're also considering letting those individuals become kind of like a franchise model, you know, where once we build that model, you know, if they partner with us to build that model, because it'll be unique, we'll consider giving them the rights to sell it in their local area, you know, so that way they can make some money as well and also spread the technology to people that need it. But this is all thanks to Brother Chris. Steel frame technologies. Thank you.
And Joe Carlos, Carlos is also, he's an electrical engineer who went back to law school, and he's a patent attorney now. So he's a very talented person.
Oh, good. When you're talking about doing joint ventures, have you thought about teaming up with, I forget the name of the charity, but they're building houses for vets who have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan who have been disabled. I forget, you may know of it. I forget the name of the organization, but it seems to me like tiny houses would be right up their alley, you know? And that giveaway of the houses to the vets. So if you partner with them, you know, you have a niche.
Yeah, we're definitely looking at that, and Chris is connected with many, many veteran organizations. And you're right, there's organizations that are looking to help veterans. And I heard some organizations that do a raffle in the town where they'll raffle off a tiny house or a greenhouse, and then they use the proceeds from the raffle to build tiny houses or greenhouses for the vets. So I think that's a wonderful model. We just need, you know, it's all about connections, you know, getting the connections.
Yeah, and I think it's a shame that the government isn't as creative as it should be towards vets. I'm a vet myself, and I don't like the government in the way that they treat vets. It seems like they're not, doesn't seem like, they are anti-vet. They put us out to war, and then they put us out to pasture, you know, so... It's terrific that civilians are taking up the gauntlet and they're doing that for vets.
Well, you know, all help appreciated, brother. You know, you can contact us through various channels. We're on Clubhouse. You know, I just put up that website recently because we're trying to do fundraising. We have a GoFundMe campaign in order to protect the intellectual property for, you know, we have the patents on the greenhouses, but two ladies on the team are architects, and they design tiny homes, buildings, and skyscrapers that also produce fish, plants, and mushrooms for the inhabitants. And this December 22nd, I got to come up with the money to protect that patent portfolio, because it's going to be worth a lot of money overseas, you know, specifically in the Middle East and areas like that that have deserts. And, of course, we've already got the patent in the United States, and we have the problems here as well. But the whole point of filing these inventions and protecting them and monetizing them is so I can fund the mission, because it's much easier to get money for commercial than it is for humanitarian, unfortunately.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's way easier to get money for commercial than for humanitarian, you know, because the people with the money want to make more money, and they're not really super interested in solving the homeless problem, you know. I've been in pictures where they told me not to talk about, you know.
Different niches.
I was instructed not to talk about humanitarian stuff with the people that have the money, which is really sad.
Well, with them, so you're not offering a product and a service, as you're talking about right now, commercially available. You have to appeal to their ego, to their vanity, to even name a tiny house maybe after them or a part of a tiny house in order for them to actually be interested in anything that's really humanitarian. Then if you do that, then there's no problem. They'll donate millions of dollars, you know, as long as their name is in the paper.
Yeah, they call that greenwashing, which is happening quite a bit.
But that's what they do at universities. You know, they name the science building or the cafeteria or some dormitory or the gymnasium. They name it after the person who put up the money.
There you go. That's right.
You're right.
You know, so you have to appeal to their vanity. You know, if you make inroads commercially, and I'm at your site, so I'm looking at your description of what's going on. I'm seeing the mushrooms that you've described, the aquaponics, et cetera. And if you do that, if you're successful there, that's an inroad to getting to them so that they, you know, their vanity can be massaged. And if you can get them, you know, let's say you name a tiny house after you. Oh, boy.
No, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. You know, you look at all the foundations and all the libraries and all the things that are built by the people that have the wealth, always has their name on it. I hadn't really thought of that.
And
you're
it's
right.
More what and what LA was saying was more poignant, because what you're mentioning were, you know, would be like foundations where they will donate millions of dollars, but their foundations are actually money laundering schemes. But when LA was talking about what I was thinking about in terms of colleges, those are real donations, in which those donations will go to to build the wing, and they'll have, you know, there's always a catch. You know, they're not going to give away money for nothing, not even to get the name in the paper. But if you can minimize the, you know, the kind of control they'll have over the allotment of whatever they're going to give you, then, you know, it's a good step up. So I wish you luck, because, like I said, I'm a vet, and, you know, I'd rather take a general and throw him out over the bridge than than say, nice work, General.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've just hooked up with a group called Community Grid, and they're a group of people that are building, you know, greenhouses, basically. And one of the gentlemen that's on the group, these are incredible humans, by the way. They're connected. They're also connected to the humanitarian, but they're also very well connected to the, you know, for-profit end. And he was doing a cost analysis on a 3,000-square-foot greenhouse. The mushroom production alone will pay for the greenhouse in 1 year.
Just
the mushroom production. So, you know, we're very happy about that, because I was concerned about having to do math to figure out the ROI, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
as it turns out, just the mushrooms will pay for the entire greenhouse. And then you also have the fish and the plants. And the reason I integrate the fish and the plants is because I was trying to design a structure that would feed a human all year round in a 10 by 20 square foot area. And I built one in my backyard. And you can see pictures of it on my channel, OU812 Aquaponics. You know, that thing has been operational for 11 years. I made it from a 10 by 20 carport, some ThermaShield, and no construction experience. I'm an electrical engineer. You know, it's built like crap. My wife calls it the eyesore, but that thing has been running for 11 years and like a clock with very, very little maintenance.
L.A., what do you think? I mean, because you had the topic about tiny houses. Do you see an uptick in demand for tiny houses because of the way inflation is taking money out of people's pockets?
No doubt about it. I look at it as sort of like a de facto banker's revolt, people not getting mortgages. So the tiny house events that I've been to, you have quite a few women, too, but you have a lot of people with no carpentry skills, but they're learning how to build their own tiny house, or they're converting a boxcar into a tiny house, a school bus into a tiny house, or, you know, so they can move around the country or whatever. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's been, I guess, a good 10 years, and you even have some cities now. Like Los Angeles is one of them. They have a little tiny house village in Los Angeles, California now. So, which, you know, the city controls that. But, people are, they're not signing up for the 30-year mortgage. Now, granted, there's not going to be and it depends on the generation. You have a lot of Generation Z people. Like, I use YouTube as a barometer. So we have a lot of 13, 14, 15-year-olds that are building their own simple tiny house. But they're looking at, you know what, I don't want to get stuck like my parents or my grandparents, Generation X or Baby Boomer generation, you know. Yeah. They don't want to get stuck with a 30-year mortgage. Then you got a lot of people that are travel bloggers. So, and to live in your largest cities now, you essentially, I'm sure there are exceptions, you need to become wealthy or knocking at the door of it. Because I'm talking about probably your top 100 cities in the United States, like places like New York, L.A. I'll give you an example in Washington, D.C., the house right next door to mine. The previous owner of it, my next door neighbor for a number of years, she's 101 years old right now. Her son and daughter sold the house after they put her in a nursing home. And now she's got great-grandchildren or even grandchildren and great-grandchildren. That house sold for over $600,000. The average 25-year-old or 30-year-old doesn't have $600,000 for a starter home.
Yes,
so that's why I think tiny houses, and they don't necessarily have to be tiny houses. They can be 1,000 square feet or even 1,500 or even 1,800 square feet. But you're going to see, I think there's a movement of people, maybe there's not a mass exodus, that they're moving further away from your larger big megalopolis cities.
Well, they should. I'd like to.
That's how I see it.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I don't think the economy is going to repair itself. I think it's going to get worse in the next 2 years. So tiny houses are a good idea to me.
Right.
You're 100% correct. And, you know, part of the reason I built my greenhouse in my backyard is exactly for that reason. You know, I have a way of producing fish plants and mushrooms perpetually now in my backyard from a 10 by 20 carport, you know, and it's not rocket science. I'm a rocket scientist, but, you know, the technology is extremely simple. The Chinese invented it, you know, 200 years ago. They invented the concept of earthships or passive solar designs.
Was it 200 or 2,000 years?
I'm not sure. You know, I think it's in the hundreds of years, But I'm sure there was other ancient people that figured it out, because it's basically the concept of the greenhouse effect. You know, basically if you take a insulated container, right, and you put glazing on the front, glass on the front, and that container will get really, really hot. For example, get in your car in the middle of winter. It could be minus 20 degrees outside, and the inside of your car can get up into the hundreds. Just like my greenhouse, it'll be minus 20 outside with 3 feet of snow, and it'll get 100 degrees in there once the sun is shining. And it's the concept of you know, that the Chinese people figured out, is that if you dig a hole on the side of a mountain and cover that hole with plastic, and you make the angle of the plastic the perfect angle for the winter solstice sun. You know, in the wintertime, the sun is very low in the sky. In the summertime, the sun is very high in the sky. When it's really low in the sky, all that solar energy is being transmitted into that hole. And in the back of the hole, this is the brilliant part. This is the Earthship part. This is the passive solar part. They take barrels full of water, 55-gallon barrels full of water, painted black, and they calculated exactly how many barrels they need to keep that hole 70 degrees all year round. At night, you know, because, you know, they're growing food with 4 feet of snow outside, so, you know, you're getting some very cold temperatures, they take a blanket and cover the plastic, literally a blanket, and then they grow inside there just conventionally, no electricity, nothing, just conventional growth, and now they're producing food with 4 feet of snow outside. I saw that, and I said, this is incredible. I need to build one. So I built, you know, when I built my greenhouse, I made it a passive solar design, and I've got videos 11 years, 11 winters with me growing food in there. And you know, not to get too spiritual, but I was instructed to teach everybody how to do it. And I documented every single step of the way. I took pictures of everything that I did to build that greenhouse, because I had, you know, I had an intuition or a calling, whatever you want to call it, that people are going to need these things, and they're going to need them yesterday. So, you know, myself, I immigrated from South America. My parents came from Ecuador when I was 6 years old. We moved into 9th Street Northeast, Washington, D.C., a year before the Martin Luther King riots. I saw 8th Street get burned to the ground, okay? I saw mass pandemonium, you know, you could shoot somebody in the middle of the street and nobody would even notice. Then in my 30s, I was working at Hughes Aircraft in El Segundo during the Rodney King riots, and I'm looking at the sixth floor of this high-rise building in El Segundo, and it looked like Iraq. There was like freaking, you know, multiple fires everywhere. I took my, you know, I don't want to talk guns much, but I took my gun to work that day because I knew it was going to be fucking crazy, you know, getting out of there. They let us out early that day at noon. The Nordstrom's was getting looted in real time at noon, like literally trucks just pulling up and taking everything out. None of the lights were working, and people were, you know, I've got military background. I'm a survivor. You know, I've had guns pointed at me multiple times by police. You know, you could, you know, the look of fear in white folks' eyes, people were scared shitless. I mean, you know, they're running red lights. It was incredible. And I had a 75-mile commute. I was commuting from El Segundo to Lancaster, California, because that's the only way I could afford to buy a house, was to have a 75-mile commute one way. It took me like, I don't know, usually the trip was like an hour and a half. It was like 4 or 5 hours that day. None of the lights were working. People are running red lights. No police to be found anywhere. And you know, when people talk about that it can't happen, you know, people that have not experienced what I've experienced, I've seen it happen. And I know how fragile this system is right now. And we need to start putting these things in our backyard like yesterday. If anybody needs help building one, I've got a YouTube channel that will teach you how to build it yourself, you know, from a carport. You know, this is what we need to do yesterday, you know, 10 years ago. And thank you for letting me rant on that.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, because the what America's going through now, what the rest of the world is going through, we can take a look at China. And I think it's, what is it? It's in Shanghai, I believe. Something like they have 30 million people still under a COVID lockdown. People are committing suicide. They're finally rising up against the cops. And that's China. What's happened in Australia is egregious. It can happen here. Very easily can happen here. We have politicians who value money more than they do America.
And again, you know, we need to get big money lobbying out of our government. You know, I don't care which side you're on, left or right or middle or whatever. When you hear your public servants talking about elections, ask them this question: what is your position on term limits and getting big money lobbying out of our government? And I think you're going to hear crickets, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, well, the way I actually grill, I've had the opportunity to grill some candidates on Blog Talk Radio. When I say grill, I don't ask them the same questions everybody asks them, because all they're going to do is give you the same answers that everybody else will do. They will provide the same basic resumes as everybody else who's gone before them to achieve that particular job. What I say to them is, if you get elected, you're going to be a freshman. You will not have a lot of power. But what you can do is, and if you make this promise, this is something which I think would be valuable for your constituents. If you get elected, will you go around to your different party members and ask them if they will join you, not to sponsor a bill, okay? Because as a freshman, you're not going to get much cooperation that way. And then again, a crooked politician will say, well, see, I'm fighting the good fight, but, you know, my fellow colleagues, they don't want to join. But what anybody can do is go around or call up, if you're a Republican or a Democrat, your fellow Democrats or Republicans, and say to them, I'm going to issue a press release on the corruption that's inside Congress. Would you like to join that press release? Would you like to say that you would like to investigate corruption within Congress, and just, you know, get a yes or a no and put it in your press release and have a press conference and do it within 2 weeks?
That's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Because if you get that type of commitment, 2 weeks, I also say, if you don't do it, would you be willing to have your constituents sign a petition to get you out of office within a month or 2 months? Because I'm tired of people saying, yeah, I'm for this and I am for that. And I think the American people have been getting shafted, and I'm here to fight for your rights. And I've been a doctor, I've been a lawyer, I've been an architect, I've been an engineer, and I've done so-and-so. Who cares? When you're in office, everything changes, like getting married. You know, when your girlfriend says, I do, to become a wife, she no longer has the mindset of a girlfriend. She has the mindset of a wife. This is my kitchen. These are my curtains. Get out. So when somebody becomes a politician, they're thinking, I need money for my reelection campaign. If you don't have enough money to help me, get out. They don't care about the individual emails or the snail mail that lands on their desks. They care about the money for their campaigns. And a lot of them are there to go to Congress specifically to get lobbyist money. So when I grill a politician, I want a commitment from him or her that within 2 weeks he's going to do something like that, so that we know now, not 6 years from now, about what they're going to do. Now, I understand your position on term limits, but boy, can they do a lot of damage in 4 years or 6 years.
That's a fact, you know, and, you know, we wanted to put a challenge out to every elected politician in America. I want you to spend a night in a box. I want you to wear someone else's shoes, and I want no money in your pocket. And then we want to have a discussion the next day.
Yeah, they won't respond, But it's good for you to point it out. It's good for you to show the people that, hey, you know, you voted for this clown. Why doesn't he do something to show you now that he meant what he said when he was on the campaign trail? And how did this guy get so much money from the RNC or the DNC? Things like that. The American people have to wake up. We have a good system of getting people out of office if they're corrupt, if we know enough to vote them out. But if we're too stupid, as I think we are, and we just keep electing the same people over and over and over again, we're a brainwashed bunch of idiots, I'll tell you that.
All right, so, Joe, you have there the contact information for him? Yeah, I guess if you got the website, you got the contact info, right?
Yeah, I'm already there at the website, yeah. And I look for his videos on YouTube. Yeah, thanks.
And Chris, give him your website as well. Chris, if you're there.
Let me find it. Hold on a second.
Okay, sure.
If you search Hope and Chris Collins, you will find, that's how I always forget the name of the website, but if you search Hope and Chris Collins, let's see here, this is Hope, housing our people everywhere, and this is, well, there's, I think there's, Chris, are you there? Because there's multiple websites. There's a Wix site that's up, that the name is sort of, it's ETIHW34.wixsite.com. But I know there's another one, but I think Brother Chris is not on the line. You know, I'm connected with Hope. In other words, we're working with them because we can generate the greenhouses that can go with the tiny homes. So if anybody needs to reach me, you can reach me at I'll give you my aquaponics email, ou812aquaponics@gmail.com. That's the letter O, the letter U, the number 8, the number 1, the number 2, aquaponics, AQUAPONICS. In L.A., I think there's a way – is there a way to post links on the web version of this podcast? Because that would be really helpful to be able to post.
You know what? If you go to our Facebook page, go to It's My House TV on Facebook, and you can post on there as much as you want.
Oh, that's perfect. It's My House TV on Facebook. I'm part of that.
On Facebook. Yeah, that's on Facebook. That's all free. Yeah.
And I'm looking up right now, Chris Collins and Housing Our People Everywhere, founder and CEO of Hope. Okay, well, he's on Twitter. I'm on no social media at all. Okay, he's got one on Facebook, too. Facebook. Okay, here's one, Central. Get there.
CIProud.com. That's a news story.
Oh, Central Illinois Proud. Okay.
Yeah, that's
what I've got here.
I think it's ABC or CBS.
Okay. Bloomington nonprofit founder hopes to build 100 homes this winter for homeless. Last year. Okay. Good. Yeah, and hats off to you too, L.A., because I know recently you've been doing broadcasts trying to help the homeless people, especially in Los Angeles, since that's where you're located. So
well,
since
no,
the
no,
government
I'm not
is
in
especially
LA.
Doing a good job. Oh, you're not?
I'm not in L.A. No, I'm not in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Matter of fact, I didn't there was on Clubhouse yesterday, somebody mentioned it in one of their rooms on Clubhouse, then I came back later on and heard the mayor's press conference on YouTube. And then the mayor of New York City, who's in his first year as well. He's been talking about, I don't think these big city governments will be able to solve it. It's, you know, it's, it's you got different type of homeless, and then you know, once, in my opinion, if a person's not mentally ill or not handicapped by some type of substance abuse, because you have a lot of working homeless. So mm-hmm. I believe, you know, if you teach them how to fish, they'll be good. But that's my take on it. I think that a now solution would be, really, I mean, just copy off the Amish. You don't have to be getting to their religion or dress like they dress and all that. But, you know, their kids, by the time they're in, 13 years old or whatever, they know something about carpentry or how to bake a shoe fly pie. So they're very uh-huh. entrepreneurial, whereas a lot of people that live in these larger cities, they're addicted, just like a drug addict, to the comfort and conveniences that Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Seattle, that, you know, everything's there. And mm-hmm. now it's supply and demand. Well, you know, the stat I put out here a gazillion times. 86% of the population in the United States only occupies 3% of the land mass. So if you take a person who's got a PhD from the Wharton School of Business or something like that, and then you stick them out in the middle of Alaska, they don't have the skill set, more than likely, to cut it in the wilderness.
You know? Yeah, well, yeah. Because, number one, they haven't studied anything about the wilderness, and they only know what they know from either Stanford, MIT, Harvard, doesn't matter. You only know what you know, and until you actually have the experience, you're going to have to find out the hard way.
Right. So I think it's I use YouTube as a barometer. So you YouTube, you got people that are learning new skills because, you know, they – you know, a lot of people are voluntarily living in their car, or they're learning how to convert a school bus into a mobile tiny house. Mm-hmm. They're learning how to grow their own food, because it's in a lot of these larger cities, is just not sustainable, and for them at their pay grade. So, and then the cities, you know, they keep on raising these property taxes, or at least the top, let's say, 100 cities. So, you know, it some people can't afford to pay $5,000 a year in property taxes. You know.
Well, and the rents in the cities that you're talking about, the minimum when they want to rent a brand new apartment is like $2,000. Now, that's $24,000
right.
a year. And in a recession, you need to make $50,000 in order to survive because of inflation, government clamping down on you, et cetera. So to pay $24,000 out of your pocket just for, you know, a studio apartment practically, you know, people
right.
should get out of the cities, you know, and learn how to live in the mountains. I'd like to have a tiny house that just I can pull through the right out there in the country, away from everything.
That's,
in the wilderness.
That's the way in my opinion, that's where the ball is going. Because if for people that want to stay in your larger cities, particularly in Western countries, whatever you're earning in a year, you need to figure out a way to start earning that per month. Because, I mean, L.A., Seattle, Washington, Boston, Chicago, Miami, and depending on your lifestyle, some people, they're going to have to adjust to they're going to have to learn a new lifestyle. You know, instead of consuming all the time, you know, what are you producing? You know, that's why I like the Amish. I mean, simple stuff. I mean, it pies, cookies, meals.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wife or the daughter, and then, you know, the husband or son, they're building carports. They're doing what Carlos is doing. building barns, you know, that type thing. Even with many Amish, I don't know about all, but many, they don't, a lot of their communities, they don't build churches. They attend church at each other's homes, to each other's house. Whereas you have some people out here like Preflo Dollar, you know, he wants $65 million for a jet. You know, then he's got this big monstrosity of a temple. You know, but it's not only him, you know. Before he passed away, what's this guy, Robert Shuler? He built the Crystal Cathedral. But the Amish, they no, we're going to attend church. We'll do church at my house this Sunday. We'll do it at yours next Sunday. You know, that's how they do it. So, and that's how they roll as a community. So it's a whole lot of options out here. You can do a lot of cherry picking. So just see what's out here and then just mold it to whatever you want to do and live your life that way. I'm going to see if he's on. 309-580, you had your hand up. Are you there, 309, area code 580? Okay. All right. Well, we're going to listen to him all today. We're going to end it here today because we're in overtime. Thanks, Joe, for calling in. Thanks, everybody, for calling in. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and a safe holiday.